Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at JWright929ESPN. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
Joining me live from, what do we call it, paternity leave. He, of course, writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. He's on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Thank you for this reprieve from Daddy Daycare. It is needed and appreciated.
Did I see your second born has a great birthday?
Wait, do y'all share a birthday?
Was it August 3rd?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Wow. Okay, so that was significant for us because I'm a late July guy, which really put me up against it in terms of the age cutoff in youth sports.
Yeah, but you know, then
I was always the youngest.
But you were the oldest. Great birthday. But now I think I don't think August 1's the cutoff anymore.
That kills me. I should have maybe looked into that. Yeah,
I don't think it's the cutoff anymore. Also, by the way, Tom Brady's birthday, George's favorite quarterback, Zach Wilson's birthday.
Ugh.
He can still spin it.
Allegedly.
I'm convinced 95% of him getting drafted second overall. Do you remember that pro day when he...
Oh, do I.
He went on the pro day, and then Cobb, they had a play where he would, fake. There's no running back because it was a COVID pro day. He just ball faked like he was running a play action fake off a stretch, bootlegged, and then threw what would have been a wheel route. And I'm convinced they just drafted him second literally off that throw.
Yeah, routes on air. That's my favorite. This time,
yes, plays on air, routes on air. Oh, yeah.
So we had that yesterday at a Tennessee practice. A reporter in the one session that they actually got to see routes on air. So no defense. That's what that means if you don't know. Routes on air. It's basically just like me and you going in the backyard. Hey, run a 5-yard slant. Hey, run an out and up. You know, like we're 9 years old, right?
Yeah.
And they posted these stats from McIntyre and Faison from this practice yesterday, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, breaking down the completion percentage from routes on air. And yeah, I'm totally with you, Zach Wilson. I know exactly what you're talking about. He threw that bomb against nobody, against no defense.
But
everybody fell in love.
Tight spiral, tight.
So wait, Who else is August the 3rd? What other? I'm July 27th. I have Jordan Spieth and Alex Rodriguez.
Jordan Spieth currently the outright leader at TPC Southwind.
Yeah.
Many
did Harris
asking.
English fall back, or did Jordan Spieth make another birdie?
Spieth got to 5 under, and Harris hit in the water on 18.
I need Jordan Spieth to win, because I need somebody who uses a blade putter to actually win a tournament on the PGA Tour.
All right, let's think. Is Koivun a mallet guy?
I think the last however many winners have been mallet guys. It's really upsetting.
Do we have anyone that's a blade putter that is still a good putter? I don't know if you've been. I know you're a big Champions Tour guy, much like myself. Did you know even Stricker's gone to a mallet? It's like if we've lost Stricker, it's over for us.
Yeah, right.
We're just holding on.
I just went back to a blade, and I'm like, do I need to go back to a mallet now? I don't know.
I don't know. That's the other thing. I think I'd rather be a worse putter with a blade than be a better putter with a mallet. You have to stand for something in this world.
Exactly. If you're not going to go with the blade, then you might as well go full on Bernhard Langer.
Correct.
Anchor.
Yeah.
You know,
broomstick all day, every day. So right now over at TPC Southwind, Jordan Spieth, he's on 18. He is at 5 under. He leads over Michael Thorbjornsson, who also won at Detroit, right?
Yeah,
I think he won the Lift Clean and Place Invitational in Detroit. He's definitely a mallet guy. Fleetwood is currently at 4 under as well. I think he's playing with Spieth. So that group's hot.
Rory is just sleepwalking. I mean, did you see the shank he hit on three?
I did. The first shot I saw today when I turned on the coverage, because ESPN put on the ESPN Plus coverage on ESPN early, was Rory on three, dead center of the fairway, looked like a mid-iron at most. Cobb, he hit it in the middle of the lake. Like, that happened. Like, it was 80 yards short of his target.
It was such a low, shanky hosel rocket that I thought it might skip across. That's how ugly it was.
Now, I was telling George this. So, of course, one of my favorite things to also do is I love to immediately go to the bottom of the page.
Oh, Robert McIntyre. Oh, my God.
I need someone. Okay. I need someone to tell me on six, he makes a triple. We do not. I can't see video. Cobb, I think we have a whiff.
I'm seeing what you're seeing, which is like that shots two and.
Correct.
Or, yeah. Shots two and three almost came from the same spot.
He hits it 270 into the trees. No shame there. Good strong punch out that he hit 7 feet, so he must have hit a tree. Then he hits it about 90 yards, so I guess he punches again or tried to punch again. But where I go to is shot number five, he's 12 feet 6 inches from the hole. Shot number six, he's 12 feet 5 inches from the hole, and then he was in the hole. So I need to know if we had an actual whiff.
Yeah, somebody get out there. This reminds me of when I was covering the tournament back in 2013, because I was an intern at 56. And there was, you remember that 15-year-old Chinese guy who got into the field?
The kid that Augusta gave the slow play penalty to?
Yeah, and so he ends up like way off the beaten path, and I was following him because he was like the sensation of the week. Because keep in mind, this tournament has not always been a playoff event or a WGC event, and so you used to sort of have to find stories, right? And that's going to be the future, as we know, 2028 and beyond. And anyway, this dude's out in the bush somewhere, and he actually he improved his lie, and he didn't think anybody saw it, and like I was over there. And like, I saw it, and that was my on-air debut. I went on air to talk about him cheating. Anyway, all that to say, we need a. I hope somebody was sleuthing on Robert McIntyre. I mean, I know it's hot out there, but I don't know if that's a part of the course that spectators can even go. So like, who knows? Like, it may just be a mystery.
So, have you tried TourCast?
Yeah, I mean, I've got his. Like shot progression pulled up here now, but it's unclear. It's unclear what happened.
Yeah. I mean, he was slapping it around. I wish we actually had video.
I think it says his second shot went 7 feet and 3 inches.
Five.
So he was probably trying to get through a window in the trees and then just got ran into a limb, and then his third shot went 30 yards.
Okay, yeah, it's the play by play was wrong, but it appears like Big Shot Bob's just having a fabulous time at TPC Southwind. Big Shot Bob also, I gotta bet the Scott's not exactly having a great time with the old Memphis Heat.
It's jarring. He was 8 over through 6, so. I think, honestly, you know, people say this all the time.
Important to note, he's really steadied up. No, he added another double on 15. I was going to say, other important note is that TPC Southwind, par 70, so 8 over. He still could have broken 80. But now he's going to need to get one to break 80.
That if you and I went out and played the first 6 holes at TPC Southwind from the tips, that we could do 8 over.
Are you saying if you and I together... Are you saying
no? Like if you and I both went out there, I think one of the two of us from the tips would. I mean, come on, right? Like you've got a par 5 in there. You've got like you've got, I mean, two is not like a really difficult hole. Like I could easily, I think I could make a par on three, the par five.
From the tips. One is not overly long, 415. All right. You and I can make bogey there easy.
And the greens aren't even rolling that fast, at least not yet. Like the scuttlebutt on the broadcast is, hey, they're trying to protect the greens because it's so hot. Like they don't want them to get baked out. So they're rolling pretty slow right now. So like, I think I could play bogey golf right now.
Guys, I'll say this. Guys are hammering him. Have you been watching? Like the pace is like everybody's just like, it is like jarring to watch how firm they're hitting putts.
Well, Scotty had a downhiller on nine that he left it short.
I worry about us on four.
Well, don't go flag hunting. Like, you know, we're just trying to play bogey golf here.
You'd have to blast it right.
I mean, if we're scrambling, maybe we take on the pin.
Oh, I definitely think you and I scrambling would break 40.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
But I'm saying I wonder if both of us. I mean, listen, I can go out and play Colonial South on Saturday and shoot 45 on the front. I almost had last week. I know everybody loves to hear about your golf round, but this one was legitimately funny. I almost had shoot 50 on the front, shoot 39 on the back.
Goodness, man, what happened?
I found the hosel with the irons on the front. You know, the worst part was like I kind of like drove the absolute crap out of it. There were some shanks with the wedges, and then in the back I just kind of figured it out. And it's like that's like I was driving it well enough that once I finally figured out how to hit an iron, it was like pretty easy.
George, how's your golf experiment going? I haven't checked in with you in a while. I don't know if you're over there, but if you are, I want to hear about it.
It has certainly been a bit on pause. You know, when it's okay. Just a weekend thing and it's, oh, got work this weekend. Okay, cool. We'll pick up next weekend. Oh, my bad. I'm at a wedding this next weekend. Okay, we'll check back in next weekend. You know how it goes.
You're not dedicated to the craft. That's what I'm hearing.
Not yet, no.
He has like seven jobs.
That is also true.
If he's awake, he's working. And if he's not, he's like mowing his yard.
Also true.
Like the guy never sits down. Again, so the update over at TPC Southwind, currently in the lead we're now tied for the lead. Michael Thjobrunsson gets in at 65. He's at 5 under. Jordan Spieth currently playing the 18th. He's also at 5 under. Tommy Fleetwood a shot behind at 4 under. Gary Woodland also at 4 under, as is Vic Hovland. Ludvig Åberg is at 3 under, as is the Kitty Cat, Kurt Kitayama, Sung J.M., Jake Knapp, Harris English, Mav McNeely, Nico Echevarria at 2 under, as is the Septic Tank, Scotty Scheffler, Alex Smalley, Shane Lowry, Pepper Pal, Sahith Theegala, and Minwoo Lee. Rory's still at even, right?
I've got him at plus one through 16.
So another nice sloppy bogey.
But hey, look, it's a no-cut event. So like, did you see when they asked him basically like, why was it important for you to be here? And he basically said PGA Tour Commissioner Brian Rolopp told me to be here.
Yeah, I mean, my speculation, the reason why he's here is, it to me, seems likely he did not play enough events to where his status for next year could have been revoked. They clearly cut a deal because the PGA Tour needs Rory McIlroy to play every event he wants to play. Hey, we'll look the other way on this rule, but you're playing the playoff.
Yeah, I just question like his motivation to be here. Like, it doesn't seem high. He basically was like, hey, it's important for me to be here because these are the playoffs. At least that's what the commissioner said. I didn't want to go over a month without competing. And he said something to the effect of, I need to work on my game, although that's going to be hard to do in this heat, you know, just dripping with sweat and loathing of the fact that he has to be here this week.
Well, and don't forget they moved to London for the for the summer. Like that, they live in London when, like, during the winter months, he lives in Jupiter or whatever, West Palm, whatever one of the, is it Jupiter? Yeah, I think he's in Jupiter. But they moved to London during the summer. They literally summer in London.
Well, Rory strikes me as the guy who has plenty of private jet access.
Well, yeah, I mean, remember that's where everybody was getting, remember everybody got mad at the Masters because he said rather than practicing in Florida, he'd drop Poppy at school, fly to Augusta, and then fly back.
I mean, unbelievable. Just what a life.
It's a great life if you can get it.
Yeah, it's good work if you can get it. You know, so George, you say golf isn't a job, right? But like, look at Rory Mac, like, you know, all he did was practice a little bit. Now he can just fly all over the world at a moment's notice. So
I'm sure that's a little bit might be an understatement.
There's no skill involved. Like, yeah, it's just you work your way. Yeah, it totally. There's nothing.
Nothing.
Potential storyline to watch. I think it would be cool. Like, I know Gary Woodland's health issue wasn't necessarily cancer, but he did obviously have to undergo like a pretty serious brain surgery. And like, I don't know, there would be something kind of cool if he got a huge win in a playoff event in Memphis, you know, kind of having understood and walked in the shoes of some of the St. Jude's kids. Like, there's a parallel there. There's a column there. There's a cool moment there if that were to happen. And he's sitting here one off the lead right now. So that's what I'm rooting for to happen, is for some sort of, tug at the heartstring sort of winner, like a Gary Woodland, I think would be a fitting winner for this year.
I agree with that. I think that's a solid point. I guess I'll ask you this. How do you sum up where we are with the golf tournament?
Well, I take the long view on this. Like, it's obviously disappointing that this tournament, which, what, for the last decade-ish, has been one of the premier events on tour. Like, the fact that that's going to cease to be the case after next season is disappointing. But then I also remember the years growing up where, in the late 90s and early 2000s, I was thrilled just to go and get to watch David Toms or, like, some C-plus list level
Justin
player.
Leonard. Remember, Justin, the Texas guys, for whatever reason, showed up a lot.
Yeah, like,
Bob
I think
Estes was a popular player.
Yeah, right. So, like, there's been this tournament has gone through ebbs and flows. I mean, you go back, there was a time there where briefly they had lost FedEx as a sponsor at one point. And this thing was, like, bottom of the barrel as bad as it gets. Like,
the title presenting sponsor was Stanford Financial, which was legitimately a Ponzi scheme.
And they were handing out sponsors exemptions. I mean, literally anyone in the city of Memphis who had ever sniffed the nationwide tour was like getting a sponsors exemption.
Teed it up as a pro, you were playing.
It was bad. And so, like, yes, going Challenger Series is going to be a downer, but I think there's some silver linings in it because, you know, I was talking even with like a buddy of mine in town, you know, you played golf with him this summer, who has a decent job. And he's like, man, like we've got a mortgage. Like, we've got a kid. I don't know if I really want to, you know, swing $150 to go and sweat it out this weekend. And maybe the barrier for entry gets a little bit lower because I think it's gotten to a point with, you know, I love the deals they're doing where you can get all the waters and everything, you know, the meal plus ticket or whatever. Like, there's some good value
for those that want to go out there. It's hot dogs, I believe. Any Coke product, including Dasani. So you can still get, you know, if you really want to sweat it out, you know, go throw down a few soft drinks and get dehydrated that way. But unlimited water.
So I'll say this, like the Germantown, Collierville, like East Memphis, hey, I've got a free ticket. One, I can afford a ticket. Two, I don't even need it because I got a buddy who works at FedEx. I'm going to get in for free. Like, you know, those people are always taken care of. They're well represented out there. But maybe in the future, even if we're going to lose the marquee aspect of this tournament, like maybe we can make it more accessible to the common Memphian again. Like, because I grew up in Bartlett, like the epitome of middle class. And it was like, all right, like, this is going to be a splurge. Like, me and my dad, like, we're going to spend $25, you know, to a piece to go out here to the tournament, right? And, like, you know, like, we wouldn't have been able to do that if tickets had cost what they cost now. And so, like, I hate that, like, it's going to lose its marquee status, but I think the silver lining in all of it is that, like, you're still going to be able to go watch professional golf in the city of Memphis and maybe do that in a way that's far more accessible to, like, the non-Germantown East Memphis crowd. And, like, you know, like, yeah, that's where I fall on it. It's like, I don't like it. I'm not like saying this is a good thing, but I think that the fact that it's going to maybe become a more accessible tournament to the casual fan, kind of like it was in the late 90s and early 2000s, like, I think there could be some good in that.
Yeah, I will say this. I think was the last time you went, the last one you covered before you moved?
No, I've been a few years. Like, I went and, I mean, I covered it for the CA. Like,
listen, I'm not saying it's like a Grizzlies or Tigers game. I will say I have felt the last few years that the crowds are getting more reflective of Memphis than they had growing up when I was volunteering at the tournament, when I, like, I do feel like, and now that might also be a byproduct that, like, it might be, and listen, you and I might need to talk about whether or not this is good for the game. Could be a byproduct of YouTube golf, where I do feel like the game is getting introduced to more people that probably had no interest to begin with.
Right.
I mean, I obviously, I'd like to think I played a small part in it the last time Bryson was here. I really rallied us to absolutely get in his kitchen, and that was when he shot like 45 on the back, and I didn't freak out. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't know. Like, him, that back nine, when he absolutely melted down, is one of my favorite days of watching golf ever. And I firmly believe I had a small part in that because I encouraged everyone to get out there and absolutely abuse him, and we did.
You've told me that story before, and I'm proud. I'm glad you'll have that memory.
Yes.
Hey, but you know what? Maybe Bryson ends up back in Memphis because maybe his path back to the PGA Tour is the Challenger Tour. You know, hey, just throwing it out there. Maybe that's how you get names in Memphis in 2028. Is if they do give a pathway back to the LIV guys, and it goes through the Challenger series, then maybe some of those guys who want to come back end up playing on that.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to someone that definitely knows more than what's going on than you and I do. Jeff Calkins is in studio, the man, the myth, the legend. We talk to him next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jeff Calkins is an award-winning columnist for the Daily Memphian. He's also the former host of the award-winning Jeff Calkins Show. He's also the developer of prize-winning livestock. That was Once Upon a Time. He's on the Everything app.
We didn't
at Jeff
did
underscore.
We win awards? Did our show? I don't think the show won meant. What awards did we win? Like, we would get with we get nominated for. You guys are nominated again for the Marconi, and then and I guess we did okay in the Flyer Best of. We probably. I don't know that I was an award winning radio host.
I always took credit if you won Best Personality. I put that on the show.
Okay, well, there you go.
It's the best.
Maybe we were award winning.
Barrett Sports Media. We were like a top.
That's true. Nah,
we got one year.
We never got one. We never got best morning show. We were top 10. We were top 10.
One year, Mark and I
Barrett
got best.
Sports. We did it. We never did. I never did.
One year, Mark and I got, we were listed first in the others receiving votes. So we said we were the number one show.
The thing that I do miss is the relationship with listeners is just different than with readers. It's just different.
And it's immediate.
It's so interactive. Last night I was coming home from the golf tournament and I stopped at Costco, the one there on
Hacks Cross and Winchester.
And
terrible parking lot, by the way. And that's not my Costco.
That's my Costco. And
my
you go
parents.
To.
I go to the Germantown Parkway one.
I just
parking lot's much easier.
Getting off
I-40 way easier.
Getting out of that Costco parking lot, turning left, and getting back onto I-40 is a pain in the ass.
Just stay in the left lane. There's a traffic light.
There is a traffic light.
Just stay in the left.
You're right though. The other one pulling out, you could get whacked.
Oh yeah.
You could get anyway. So I was at Costco and I was filling up my new Subaru with gas, and And a guy is filling up the pump. And he goes, "Hey, dude." That's what he said. "Hey, dude." And I'm like, what? He said, "Did you sell your minivan?" And that's just great. Like the guy knew, figured out who I
did
was.
Did I sell my
he
minivan?
He figured out who I knew I was for $300. He figured out.
I thought you got 500 trade in.
I think it was 300 in the end. It was.
Well, you did get it to them without a bumper.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. The minivan was 500 credit. I got 500 credit for the minivan.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a CRV that I sold for 300. That's why I was confused. So anyway, so, and then he knew, he remembered that I drove a minivan, and I did reassure him that we still have our minivan family because Claire still has a minivan. So we're not minivan-less. That would be horrible to contemplate. We still have one minivan.
You would not have gotten, if Claire didn't have a minivan, you wouldn't have gotten this car.
That's exactly right, because I need somewhere to put the dogs. The other thing is, by the way, since I bought a new used car.
It's the newest car you've probably ever bought.
I think. I'm now experiencing the whole tag issue, though. Like, I have a temporary tag.
Oh, yeah.
And you're supposed to get your plates in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And my temporary tag is now, it's been 3 months or something. It's now worn out. So I got to go back to
Chimpy and
get a new temporary tag. Like a Memphian?
I was just saying, like, this is the moment. Like,
Get a flat tire from hitting a pothole.
Yep.
It's quintessential Memphian.
Yes.
And waiting for your tags.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah. So I had to roll on in here because I had to reaffirm the connection with the. No, honestly, what happened was. Gabe texted me and asked if I'd come on the show, and I'd be happy to go on Gabe's show. I was a semi-regular on Gabe's show, but first things first, I had already been on with John.
Trader.
And so I thought I should go on with my two producers, mm-hmm. former producers, before I, you know, pussyfoot with Gabe. So now I can go on with Gabe too. And I'm not going to be on a lot, but it's good to be on. It's good to be in the studio. Things haven't changed that much. Oh, am I on video? I guess I'm on video.
Am I on video?
You're being seen by dozens of people worldwide.
Dozens of people. Yo.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. So there you go.
Well, that's curious. Because, like, do you miss it? Because I've said, schedule-wise for me, it's better. But there is no doubt I do not like waking up and not talking to you every day.
That's the part I miss is I like talking. And B, I really like both the community in here, but also the broader community. That's the part I like. You know, I miss. I don't really miss on a given Tuesday when it's not been, let's be honest, the busiest sports month you've ever had here. So there are lots of days when I'm happy to ride a bike or do something else instead of. So that part I don't miss, but I do miss the community both in here and beyond that comes with radio, which is just different from other places. And then stories pop up, and you're like, I don't have anywhere, because I'm not going to write. So, for example, have you guys spent much time on the snake story in Arkansas today?
Is this the helmet stories that we're talking about? So, we have not.
It's almost impossible to believe.
It's so funny. I was actively talking about this with, like, my mom and sister.
It's just an insane story, and I can't write about this for the Daily Memphian. You haven't mentioned it on your show?
Well,
I
needed more details.
Well, venomous snake hides in football player's helmet during practice while he wears it. How do you say it? Is it Mammel? Is that how you pronounce
sure.
that place in Arkansas? That's not that far away.
Sure.
Mammelle. I've never known how to pronounce it, but it's not that far away. Anyway.
Thursday, it's not like Lafayette, where everyone else thinks it's Lafayette. It's like, no, that's Lafayette.
So what happened is this student athlete initially felt something odd when putting the helmet on, but continued practicing, this according to his coach. At some point, it felt unusual enough for him to bring it to a coach for examination when the snake's head was discovered peeking through the padding in the helmet. Animal services were called. It turned out to be a 2-foot cottonmouth that had nestled behind the padding of the helmet. And they said that it had eaten. One of the officers noticed that due to it being fat, big and fat, may have recently eaten a couple days before. It was probably trying to find a dark spot to digest the food. And when it was coming, it saw a helmet lying on the ground. So it snuck in there. He put the damn helmet on, practices for an hour, thinks it feels a little weird, and he's got a poisonous snake in his helmet.
You forgot the other detail of how they got the snake out.
How did they get? Wait,
they flooded the helmet because they couldn't. Like, they kept trying to reach into the padding, and they couldn't.
It wouldn't come out.
Flooded the helmet.
That wasn't in this story. It's a Blasio. It's not a good story.
So
they had to actually submerge the entire helmet in water.
Right, because you know, they had
a giant bucket of water.
So
to get this thing to come out.
Snake to come out.
Because you have the ear holes. So like you can't just like cover it up. Like they have to. That's how they flood it up.
Oh my God.
And again, to your point.
That is creepy as.
It's a cottonmouth. You have to be careful.
It's very venomous.
Very much so.
Very venomous. Yeah, you were thinking, it was just a garter snake, no big deal. Yeah, it's kind of still a little creepy, let's be honest. I wouldn't love that either. But a venomous snake in your helmet.
Listen, I need more follow-ups. I got to wonder if I can trust this kid. Situational awareness,
he's locked in. He's dedicated. Nothing is keeping him. I think, isn't he a guy who you'd want on defense? You always say.
I want character concerns. I don't want, because to me, this is, you're not paying attention to the details.
Yeah, so you don't want your center to have be able to go through without a snake in his helmet.
I don't want him setting
protection, and maybe not the red dot, the dot guy.
Yeah, I don't
on
need
the,
him calling
the defensive. But otherwise, if it's just your defensive lineman, like you just go get him. It's fine.
That also feels like a guy that might play me first football. Like
why?
That's the guy that might not keep contained. He might just chase the running back.
What's the connection between not noticing? He's so locked in, he doesn't notice. Just feels a little weird, brushes it off.
I don't know if he's committed to
the details.
His job.
Oh, his gap.
Correct.
He's not going to have gap integrity.
Correct.
He's not going to have gap integrity.
I have concerns.
That.
I guess the helmets, this is not a football helmet I would have worn. So like.
Right.
Like
this has got a hole. This has got a compartment basically.
How is there that much space?
It's got a compartment big enough. It's
correct.
To hide a president. Really, for example,
that's
if you needed
true.
To, for example, hide a president for some reason,
sure.
You could, it probably is big a compartment. It's like a catering size helmet.
Speaking of presidents and conspiracy connections, did you know Josh Kushner was a minority owner of the Grizzlies at one point?
I didn't know that, yes.
Was he with the Levian Group?
I don't think so.
Was that
no.
his connection?
No, it was after that. It was subsequent to that, I believe.
So is he para or is he Heisley? Yeah.
No, I think he's para. I think it was a while para since para has been owner. I think I believe. I didn't prepare for this part of the. I only prepared for the snake part of this show. I didn't prepare for.
I know
the
you know
Grizzlies ownership part of this show.
I know you know that I love a good what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think with the Lakers, I think the simplest explanation is actually right. Walter was acting like someone that needs cash immediately,
right?
Because I think he got caught basically loaning himself money,
right.
To buy things
he couldn't
afford.
It's pretty good to be able to make a cool, $2 billion? $2.5 billion?
Two and
what
a
is
half.
It in a year? Flipping out, like, whatever? That's pretty good.
But I actually think...
He probably wanted to own them, though. I don't think he... Yes, I think you're right. I think it was forced by the investigation.
Correct. He needs cash to pay certain things off.
That would seem to make sense to me.
All right, you've been writing about the golf tournament, and shout out to Jeff's column today, which my wife, happy birthday, sweetie.
Today's your birthday?
Today's her birthday.
Oh, that's nice. Happy birthday.
And she immediately said, Jeff's column made me cry. I said I'd let him know.
Interesting one. I don't know why that would
Bluey.
Make you cry. Oh, Bluey.
Bluey.
It was Rory and Bluey. Did you see the little picture of Rory walking along? There's a picture of Rory. This my photography is in the Daily Memphian. It's a picture of Rory and the 7-year-old girl walking down the fairway. She's a little looper. She's a St. Jude patient. And it is cool. Like he's got a 5-year-old. So he said, I now know how to talk to kids, whatever. And so they're just walking down the fairway. And I talked to her grandfather and she said, that girl has opinions. She's not just listening. And sure enough, you can see him walking down and they were talking about Bluey.
Well,
I've never seen Bluey.
I think that's what hit my wife. I hope you're sitting down for this. Josephine has opinions.
Does she?
And Josephine will let you know. of opinions
Bluey
with Bluey.
Good? I've never like Bluey. I was like Tinky Winky, Dipsy,
No, he's the quarterback for the Vikings.
Yeah, right. Is Bluey? Bluey's the thing that everybody watches now. Australian show?
Australian show. I would argue it is the, of what I've had to consume, it is far and away the best kids show.
It's good.
It is legitimately good. There's a lot else that Josephine's watching that is legitimately horrible.
Right. I can see that.
Bluey, so it's essentially, the only problem I have with Bluey is Josephine's growing up thinking that the example of what good fathering should be is an Australian shepherd that has endless amounts of energy and can play with his kids at all times. That's not the example that I want set. I want her to understand daddy needs dad time.
Who is Bluey?
Bluey is the daughter, the older. So there's two daughters.
Is a human daughter?
No, they're all Australian shepherds.
Oh, they're dogs. Oh,
they're anthropomorphic dogs.
This is how I know about Bluey.
They're anthropomorphic dogs, and
I see.
Bandit is dad,
and they're Australian
Chili's
shepherds.
Mom, Bluey is the older daughter.
Has it resulted in are Australian shepherds the new most popular dog? Everyone's buying an Australian shepherd. If so, good luck to them.
I don't think it was like the example. Remember when the 101 Dalmatians came out, the live action,
and
people didn't know that they're hyper.
Right, because Australian shepherds will wear you out.
I don't think it had the surge like that, but there was definitely an uptick.
Right. Anyway, Bluey, golf tournament. You were going to ask me a golf tournament question.
So I wanted
to discuss the golf tournament.
I wanted the way that I've looked at it, and I wanted your reaction. I don't think any party has acted irrationally. I do think it sucks. And as you've pointed out in columns, as you've said elsewhere, one of the details that you had that struck me, my aunt, she lives in Birmingham. She did her vacation was coming to the tournament and scorekeeping.
Right.
My grandmother, back when it used to be handwritten, the posting of the scores, my grandmother did that. This is a huge part of my life, and I don't want it to be, I don't want to be callous about that.
Right.
But maybe it's because I follow the PGA Tour, and I've recognized what direction they're clearly going, and I also understand the mechanics of FedEx and what they have to pay for and where all this is going.
Yeah, I think in the abstract, if you were to lose a golf tournament, lots of cities have lost, it's really not the end of the world. This is not like losing the Grizzlies, right? In the abstract.
100% agree.
I don't think, and you know, Memphis is a majority black city. You walk out there, it's a majority white crowd. You lose a golf tournament, it's just not, I don't think in the abstract.
It's not in the city.
It's the end of the world.
Yeah.
I think there are two issues, though, that sort of have driven this home. One is just the long history here and the personal relationship that the people who care about the golf tournament have had with that golf tournament is really remarkable. Something that lasts 70 years. This is year 69. And I can't tell you how many people remember the first time their dad took them or what all of those things, particular memories connected with it. And then, you have all these people the guy who I wrote about 2 days ago, he's a air traffic controller who's been doing this for 30 some years. And then you ask him why, and he, grown man, just like also Walker Taylor from the Germantown Commissary. I talked to him yesterday. I asked him, why does he serve all these volunteers for free on Wednesday? And they literally choke up because of St. Jude. And like that, it is deeply personal. It's not just an abstract golf tournament. It's deeply personal to folks. And then the other thing is that it's the problem is it's not just a golf tournament. It's on top of all these other things, right, that we've ostensibly lost. And it feeds into this mindset of doomsaying about Memphis. You know, literally, I can't tell you how many people you write the first story about losing the elite tournament anyway. And the first comments are Grizzlies are next, you know, or whatever. It's just like whenever Houston's closes. Well, now they're closing Houston's all over the place. It doesn't have nothing to do with crime, whatever. And so
I said this the day it broke.
Everything becomes some sort of assessment of the future of the city of Memphis, and a lot of times it's misplaced. Let's be honest. Once upon a FedEx, the tournament is here for as long as it has and become as big as it has because FedEx ponied up.
Yes.
Right?
The tournament was overinflated because FedEx ponied up.
Bigger than it really should have been in Memphis. And it shouldn't be. I think most reasonable people agree you shouldn't have an August golf tournament in Memphis. I think most people agree with that. So
I don't know when we should, but yes.
It became that because of FedEx ponied up. And so now to complain that it's all about money when it really stayed here because of money.
Correct.
Right. Is a little disingenuous. And then the last thing I'd say about this is that the other thing that I think it symbolizes, and this goes to Memphis sports more generally, is that sports has never been pure, of course, but there's been a lot in Memphis that has been based on relationships, right? Why was Memphis Tiger basketball good? Well, partly because you paid, you know, Keith Lee a shoebox of money.
Allegedly.
But also because of relationships. Memphis got Memphis kids because of relationships. And the same thing, the golf tournament was based on relationships still mattered, right, as part of the calculus.
Yeah.
And it feels like increasingly in sports, relationships matter less. The history of the tournament in Memphis matters less. The connection with St. Jude, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but it matters less, or at least seems to, if in fact this is how it's going to play out, which is that Memphis would be not getting a championship level of series event starting in 2028.
I guess I don't know if relationships is the word that I would focus on. What bothers me is history matters less.
History.
It doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter that.
It doesn't matter that Oklahoma and Nebraska played all the time.
Oklahoma and Oklahoma State don't play anymore. Like, right. It doesn't matter.
That's another way of phrasing it. Yes.
It does not matter that this tournament has been going on for 69 years.
We will tear up anything willingly for the sake of if it's one more dollar.
Correct.
We will rip up anything. There is no limit to what we can't destroy in the interest of pursuing one more dollar.
And there's no time to ask, well, wait a minute.
Right.
Is this what's best? For the product.
Right.
And so that's what I have found so soulless and disheartening as you look at the world of sports.
I think that's right. And that's particularly in college, you just can't argue that the way conferences have been destroyed.
Yes.
And realigned is better for the product or better for the fans, better for the consumer. It's just not. And so it's literally chasing every last dollar, even though it runs counter to the best interest of the sport and the fans. And that is now I'm not saying that, like, if you move them, if you, instead of having a Memphis golf tournament, you had put in Seattle, you had one in Seattle, they don't have a tournament up Pacific Northwest, right? Like I can see why it. I mean, why do you need two in North Carolina? You know, that's the other question, you know? But I can see why it would make sense for the tour to be somewhere, some other places. I 100% can see that. But I do think it's too bad. 70 years is a long time. 70 years is a long time. And it's interesting to me that, like, Jack Salmon told me yesterday that they are setting all kinds of records for, I don't mean it, who knows, actual attendance, we'll see. One thing they've done is they've bumped the ticket price considerably, but now food is free. Food and drink is free, not alcohol, but food and drink is free. It's sort of an interesting dynamic out there. But like Jack will tell you they're doing very well as a tournament. They're not taking it out of Memphis to the extent that they are because this tournament isn't doing well.
I think there's probably, especially with Jack, let's be real, there's probably some storytelling.
Right. Oh, he's the best storyteller.
To be clear, the other golf tournament that I am very familiar with is, once upon a time, was the Northern Trust. It was once upon, you want to talk about racing history, it was originally the L.A. Open.
Right.
An open championship contested for all of Los Angeles,
right.
Which now is the Genesis Invitational,
right.
The exact opposite of an open event,
right.
An invitational benefiting Tiger Woods Foundation. Jeff, I walked out my freshman year. My roommate's like, hey, you want to go to the golf tournament? We walked out and there's like 35 people there.
Right.
So like, don't tell me it's attendance. Like they'll use any of these low hanging, right. easy like quips. That's just not true. They're not in LA for ticket prices,
right.
and the tickets sold. But what is oftentimes ignored, there's this idea that we're going to go to Seattle. We're going to go to New York. We're going to go to Chicago. We're going to go to, I'm trying to think where else they don't have, Boston, where all this money is. Do you really think you're the first genius
to think
that
about,
had that
right,
idea?
Right.
By the way, those places have all had tournaments.
Right.
Guess what? They're not there.
Right.
And so I guess what drives me insane is this repeated, like, how can we get squeeze every single dollar, right. when at no point are you ever asking
what's best?
Exactly.
Yeah. What, by the way, do you make of the fact that this is just true, that generally our golf coverage, we know now who reads what, right?
Yeah.
We can tell who reads what. And so if I write a golf column, no one's going to read it, basically.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking.
Unless you put Bluey in it. And make my wife cry.
But you read about, you write about the tournament leaving and everybody reads it.
Yep.
Right? And that's true just generally of everything, right? When Poncho's left, right? No one was actually going to Poncho's at that point when the last Poncho's closed, right?
Yep.
And then, but we write a story about Poncho's closing and everyone reads it. It's just a phenomenon, right? I guess it's true. We also read about things coming. Like when
Bucky's
In-N-Out is Bucky.
Yeah.
People read. IKEA leaving. But like that was the IKEA leaving, man. That story killed for about a day, 2 days. I do think there is this. I do think for some reason there's some doomsday. It's funny. I was talking to Dan Barron, our old boss. Do you need a break or anything? Am I yammering to here? I was talking about Dan Barron, our old boss. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, because he's now in New Orleans, right? Dan's from Memphis.
But he's back.
But he's here a lot.
Yeah.
And
in a different role, but yeah.
And he said two differences in New Orleans. He loves Memphis. He grew up in Memphis. He loves his new life in New Orleans, both. But he said, first of all, and I hadn't thought about this, because we compare ourselves to New Orleans some because you got the Pelicans there. Like, who are some of the, let's be honest, weaker links,
yeah.
NBA franchises? And you say, well, at least we're not the Pelicans, right? The Pelicans, he said, New Orleans just has more money, more oil, more gas, more banks, more like there's more. It's not just FedEx and AutoZone. And there are more entities to go to. And then the other thing he said is that crime is a topic in New Orleans. Clearly, but when you go to a meeting or whatever else, it's three or four on the list. It's not number one on the list. And in Memphis, crime is number one on the list. It's the thing that sucks everything else out of the room that we talk about. Do you think either of those things, does that resonate with you? Does that seem reasonable?
So
that's his observation.
What I would say is, all jokes aside, the difference is crime in Memphis is a bug. Crime in New Orleans is like a feature. It's like part of the charm.
It's therefore assumed,
it's like the law. Like, it's like, look at the lawless. Like, it's like, it's New Orleans.
Right.
And then I think the other key difference is,
it doesn't feel like crime keeps people from the French Quarter in the way that crime 100% keeps people from Beale Street.
But
right?
I think there's also,
why is that?
I think there's something about the nature of Louisiana, and there's this idea of, you know, it's kind of its own world, and there's the expectation. I think another huge reason is it is an economy that is almost entirely built on hospitality, whether it's entertaining,
right. But wouldn't
eating,
therefore
drinking.
Crime even be a bigger story?
Well, like, you don't go. Like, let's be real. You don't go to New Orleans for a church trip. You go to New Orleans to get absolutely blasted. You know what I mean? You get loaded, fat. Like, it's indulging in every deadly sin. Like, that is what you do in New Orleans. So when crime is a part of it, it doesn't, it's not as distracting.
Yeah. It's just interesting. I just, in all of this, as we think about the tournament and Memphis's future and whatnot, I don't know. I just, that's to me, the biggest things here are, it feels like the city has been, since COVID, struggling, right? And I'll say this, I will be very glad when that lease is signed, because it's
that you want to talk about that defeatist mentality? That's just creeping up again.
Yeah, it's just crazy, though. It's just like, you hear that all the time. And I mean, we heard it when LeBron is in Nashville and all that stuff. And so I do think it will be, I think whenever that finally happens, I think that will be a relief to people when that happens. And I don't know. I've obviously spent 30 years here, and I want the tournament to stay, but I want more broadly Memphis to prosper. But I don't think this has much to do with, to the extent the tournament stays, leaves, whatever it is going, I don't think it has much to do with Memphis prospering or not prospering. It's just about FedEx, their relationship with the tour, and what they want it to be going forward.
All right, I've got one other theory. Can you stick through the break?
Sure.
All right, and then I also got to ask you, speaking of people just ripping on themselves, you got a brand new $2 billion stadium, and everybody was just joking. Yeah, like, you know.
Yeah, we can talk about that on the other side.
All right, so we got to talk about that. We'll do that when we come back, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.